Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
On today's cast, we're going to fanboy about Eldar stuff.
Clowns.
Yep. Boop. We're going hard in the paint because I love Harlequins. I know Brad likes them, but I know I love Harlequins. But as always, for those of unaware, the 40K Lorecast is a weekly podcast in the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe, with new episodes releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Before we begin, we also always ask everyone to follow and comment on the cast. So the only way that we're going to reach new listeners is via word of mouth and the streaming platforms promoting us. And the best way to have that happen is for your comments to bump us up in the algorithm. So for those of you who are leaving comments, thank you. I do read them. They are quite funny. Seriously appreciate. Additionally, in the show notes is an about. You can see the link to our website, the40klorecast.com, along with our Discord and our Patreon. Our website is growing. It's a space where we now have more information on the cast, Brad's coaching services, merchandise, and even upcoming events that we are hosting. Mm-hmm. The Discord we also bring up too, because it's an online community that we established with the cast in mind. The goal is to make a place that we could interact with our listeners, but more importantly, our listeners can interact with each other. Right now, at time of recording, we're close to 6,000 members.
Nope, we're over.
Fine. If you're listening to this in the future and you can't find our Discord,
we are over 6K right now.
No, I believe you. I'm just saying that if in the future someone tries to find the Discord and they can't find it, it's because I burned it to the ground. It's my
you're
open.
You're real weird about this too.
It is So I do want to call out Kevin, Nick, Maisie, Brian, Ethan, Steve, Ryan, Trevor, and David for moderating the Discord. If it wasn't for you, I would have exterminatus this thing so long ago, because 6,000 people on the internet speaking to each other is not always a recipe for
probably
good.
Probably being fine. I've never seen the internet be anything but informative, correct, and nice.
Oh, a very, very polite. That's what it is. So thanks to our moderators, it actually is it's functioning Discord. And I recommend anyone to come join it. It's built a really healthy community there. But if they ever all decide they don't want to moderate it anymore, it will probably cease to exist pretty quickly. It's only a couple clicks. Lastly, for those of you who play the game, Brad is a coach of 40K with 31 years now of playing the game.
I've been playing for several years.
So I think it's at 31 years and close to 10 years of coaching. Brad's really a wonderful resource for anyone trying to improve their experience on the tabletop. If you want to know more about it, you can go to our website, the40klorecast.com, or our Discord and contact him directly about his services. So with that, onto the cast.
It's clown time.
Woo, all right. Woo, woo. So Harlequins. Harlequins are, outside looking in, the dumbest, maybe the dumbest thing in the entire range.
I think you meant to say the most awesome thing.
Well, just the aesthetically looking at it, you're like, so there's a bunch of random clowns you can play. And it's like,
let's put what they look like before we get to what they
exactly
are.
They look like clowns. I mean,
like actual acrobat outfits. Yeah. They look like carnival.
Not everyone goes as hard to paint. So I will be candid. I've painted 90% of what I own, which is a lot of 40K. I have painted 0 minutes, 0 seconds, and 0 milliseconds of my Harlequins. They are all custom. They're all commission painted because they have a beautiful checker pattern on them, and there's no scenario I could do that.
Also, did you get the Eldar face for their bikes off Forge World?
No.
That's forever ago. That might be 20 years ago.
That was, that's no one. Yeah.
What do you mean no one? I know people that have that.
Because you know people who've been playing the game for 31 years.
I know other old men.
There's other old people. When I was younger, we didn't have electricity. We had to play games by candlelight. We had to carve our own D6s out of wood.
And then we played a sci-fi game.
Yeah, we played a sci-fi game because, yeah, you know, future's future. So the Harlequins look kind of odd. I'll be honest. First time I saw them, I was like, what the hell is this? And then you start learning about them, and they're the most awesome. I think they're the most awesome thing in the entire galaxy.
They also put out plays. That's a real thing they do.
Oh, we're going to get to that. So let's talk about.
I know, but I'm saying you have to set the stage for why are they saying clowns? Because they are fully dressed in.
They are dressed as clowns. They're posed as clowns.
Not Bozo the Clown. We're talking.
Like Cirque du Soleil.
Cirque du Soleil, yeah. They look like carnival acrobats. They look like.
They're awesome. But let's dive in with them. So the Harlequins they're actually a really mysterious part of the Eldar race because they've lived. They're all forever entirely within the webway in a pocket that no one can get access to unless guided there by the Harlequins.
And they're masters of said webway.
Oh, yeah. There's no one knows the webway better than the Harlequins. So the difference is while part of the Eldar race, the motives and actions of the Harlequins are actually a mystery even to the most knowledgeable Eldar.
Put them at odds a lot of times too.
Right, because the Harlequins, like, they'll never align themselves with the enemies of the Eldar, like the Chaos. But their actions will oftentimes put Eldar or Drukhari at risk and even to death from, you know, said demons. But there's always a reason behind it.
Right. And a lot of times the Harlequins, the rest of the craft worlds will talk it out eventually.
Yeah.
Will say why, to other Eldar at least.
Yeah.
Why they did what they did. The Harlequins will just smoke bomb and leave. And you're like, what the shit, man?
Yeah. Why did you? We're all like, we just lost half our forces.
Yeah.
In Eldar, and the Harlequins literally are just not there to respond.
Yep.
Very fun. From the standpoint of the Imperium, the Harlequins are maybe the most concerning of the Eldar. And this is because their motivations are completely unknown to the Imperium. Their place of origin can never be assaulted. And the Harlequins' ability to travel within the webway has created some security concerns.
I mean, it's not like they just showed up unannounced at the palace.
Yeah.
On Terra
and fought their way basically to the doors of the Golden Throne and then went.
And then legitimately Forrest Gumped it.
Yeah.
I'm kind of tired now. Yeah. I'm just going to go home.
Yeah.
Told no one why they were there.
Yeah. The custodes just all of a sudden start getting wrecked by a weird Eldar clown. It was one guy. Yeah.
The solitaire.
Yeah, the solitaire. And then they brought all the custode forces to go deal with solitaire. And the solitaire went, all right, that was fun. And just left. No information. No one has any idea why. So let's just say
they were doing there. Did they take anything? No.
Yeah.
Did they get anything strategically that they needed? Nope.
We don't think so.
Yeah, that's also true.
So we have no idea. That's what makes the Harlequins. So I like, the Harlequins, the Imperium is not a huge fan of the Harlequins in general. I'm not a fan of any Xenos, but the Harlequins are the one where like the Drukhari, it's like, hey, we should wipe them out. But the Harlequins are WTF are they here? Someone figures something out about them. Oh God, panic, panic, panic. But even within the Eldar, the Harlequins are met with concern because, as we were just saying, they will go from your ally to your enemy out of nowhere. So not necessarily in the same battle. They have done that a few times, but it's primarily where you as like Sam Hain are fighting somewhere and the Harlequins will come out of nowhere. No announcement, by the way, just appear, fight by your side and help you win. And then fast forward like 2 or 3 years, because, you know, that's a short period of time to an Eldar. Sam Hain are fighting, and they're fighting against the same Harlequins that they've just seen. Like, what the hell?
And they'll only kill a portion of your force and leave.
Yeah.
You're like, I don't even know what just happened.
Yeah, why? Now, one thing I will say with a sad face is Brad and I both do agree on this, that the tabletop to lore, Harlequins are the furthest apart.
Yeah, it's very close with Custodes, but Harlequins...
It's not. It's not. Yeah. I'm sorry. It's just not. Custodes.
Individually, so with certain models, especially.
Yeah. I mean, custodes are, don't get me wrong, custodes are good on the tabletop. Because, I mean, this is a thing where, like, I play guard. As a guard player, I should take 20 Kriegsmen, run them at a single custode, and the custode should kill all of those Kriegsmen with the Kriegsmen. Like, he picks up the first guy
and windmill jamming.
Picks up the first guy and then beats to death the next 19 with that first guy. That's fine. And they don't do it. Harlequins. Do that to the custode. The Harlequin attacks the custode. The custode never lands a hit and just gets stabbed to death while the Harlequin talks shit.
Yes, because certain things, and we'll talk about it a little bit later, but things like their flip belts, things like the fact that they can just phase in and out of reality effectively. Yeah. It works on the board, but yeah. Also there's so many stories of them killing the most heavily armored opponent because they just went, "Hey man, I left my knife inside you. Goodbye."
We'll do more of this later, but like, for example, the Death Jester has the accuracy of Deadpool. Yeah. That's the best way to explain it. And on the tabletop, no.
No.
Like, there's a, we'll tell some fun story with these guys later. But anyway, it is what it is. They also, as we said before, do represent the most difficult paint job, I think, in the entire game.
It looks so cool, though.
That's why it's the most difficult, because the difference is, like, I don't have great vision. I'm in my 40s, so I have to wear reading glasses, all that stuff. My armies look fine. Harlequins, the problem with Harlequins, you can't get away with fine. People notice when it's just fine. They're like, oh, you're playing competitively, so you painted these guys quickly.
I mean, there's a big deal on that, because I painted up the orcs, and then I was about to start with the Eldar, and one of my buddies went, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I went, what do you mean? He's like, you can paint orcs as orcs.
Yeah.
You can't be painting Harlequins and Eldar.
As orcs. No. It's the same with, like, Death Guard's a great one for that, because Death Guard can be a little bit sloppy. They're allowed to be, but, like, Thousand Sons can't.
No.
So, anyway, let's dive into the history of the Harlequins. So, the Harlequins are a pseudo-shoot-off of the Craft World Eldar. Kind of like the Craft World Eldar, they fled the Eldar civilization before the fall, and they did, like the Drukhari, they went into the Webway, but they did this well before Eldar society even had a hint of collapsing.
Yeah.
We actually don't know when they started.
I love this part of the history. It's one of the things that I don't want you to tell me what happened. Leave it in mystery.
Exactly. No, totally agree. The origin of the Harlequins actually is with one of the Eldar gods, Kegarak. It's spelled Segarak to any American because it's a C-E, is the first two letters. I always found it as Segarak, and then people kept telling me, no, it's Kegarak. So.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Back it up. I think you meant to say the laughing god?
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. I will never say his name ever.
Ah, it's Kegarak.
It's laughing god.
All right, so Kegarak is known as the laughing god, and because he's a trickster of the gods. Not like Tzeentch, who's trying to undermine and, like, manipulate mortals and fool them. Kegarak instead kind of just the line they use is Kegarak laughs at the follies of others, kind of letting them choose their own paths and enjoying
letting them choose their own doom.
Yeah.
And but then he also laughing did, he did that with the other Eldar gods.
Oh, yeah.
He's basically chaotic, neutral Loki who was chaotic evil.
Yeah. Because what I liked about it is that what he relishes in is serving as the punishment when those paths, like, he's like, Kegarak just shows up to laugh at you while you, like, fall into the volcano.
Your decisions made in your most prideful moments.
Yeah.
That's what he's there for.
There's nothing he loves more.
I heard you talking all kinds of how awesome you are and how this is the only decision that is right. I'm right behind you.
Yeah, I'm going to follow you the whole way, and I'm going to literally bring out a 10-piece orchestra to play as you fail and die.
Yep.
I like Kegarak. I think most of us do.
He doesn't have ill intentions. That's the whole thing.
Exactly.
Is he a dick sometimes? Yeah, he's a lot.
Oh, he's horrible.
He's a wild trickster.
But again, when we say trickster, I want to make it clear to people. He's not a trickster like Tzeentch. Tzeentch is actively trying to deceive.
No, he's a manipulator.
Exactly.
I would say he's a trickster god. He's not. And when I say Loki, I don't mean Loki from the Avengers and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean Loki from the actual mythology. He was kind of a bad dude, a trickster.
More than kind of, but yeah.
Yeah. It's okay. Yeah, he did some weird shit.
Yeah.
I'm saying, but he's more just straight up a trickster of, I just want weird stuff to happen.
Yes, I think a different way. My viewpoint on Kegarak is more that he effectively has infinite precog. He can see forever and just choose, but doesn't. And because he knows the future, he's there kind of, it's like when you watch a movie for the second time. That's what Kegarak's doing to the entire galaxy.
And he just sits
back and goes, ooh, there's a really good part coming up. And he's super excited where someone's about to get their comeuppance. After talking,
he's not luring people into their doom.
Never.
He's just watching it.
He just watches it and doesn't. Although the question on Kegarak is, does he get involved? And this is why he's so important in modern lore, because he may serve as the greatest chance for the Materium to defeat the Immaterium.
We'll get
more on that later. More importantly, Kegarak was believed to be the only Eldar god to survive the fall and birth of Slaanesh. We now know that Isha is in Nurgle's garden. Cain has been shattered into a bunch of shards, but still pseudo exists because the Artarks can resurrect him.
Yeah, you can bring him back as a piece of him in the Avatar. Yeah. He's shattered.
He's shattered, exactly. And now we have Yanid,
the god of death.
The god of death, which is very important for some stuff coming up later.
I love this with the ultimate trick. You remember, Slaanesh came and did all this, destroyed the Eldar civilization. Yeah. The Laughing God talked shit.
Yeah.
To Slaanesh
from the webway, knowing she couldn't get there.
Right.
And just was like,
which I think is hilarious. You're like, yeah, you ruined everything, but also you kind of suck at everything.
Yeah.
And Slaanesh was like, I just dominated your civilization. It's like, good to hear.
Yeah.
I'm going to trash your stuff anytime I can.
Yeah. Whenever I want to, I'm going to pop out of a gate you can't see or access and jack up your stuff and then go back through said gate. Good luck with that. Have a nice day. Bye. And so with the birth of Slaanesh, Kagarak, we just said, hid. With that, though, let's spend a bit more time on the actual Harlequins themselves and their function in Eldar society.
Here's my favorite part about, one of my favorite, I'm going to say this 15 times. This is going to be worse. I want everybody to know this will be worse than what I say literally, which is every episode. Yeah. But I'm going to say my favorite part because there's multiple things that I will get really excited about because I get excited about whatever I can see at that moment.
Yeah.
But the Harlequins have always been, maybe not always been, with Eldar.
We don't know when, but effectively forever.
But they're the Skalds and the poets and everything. They keep a history of the greatest achievements and the greatest falls. The Elder Society.
Let me kind of dive a bit more into their function because it took me a while to actually grasp this as someone who was reading about them years ago, is that the Eldar are poets, historians. They have incredible amounts of knowledge, but they also, the way that they perceive the world is different. They need to be able to tell the stories and the lore of, you know, of their beings. And they can't do it with just writing it down and reading it. And that's what the Harlequins are. The Harlequins put on a performance.
But it's a performance, a psychic performance.
Exactly.
It goes in everywhere. Because again, we have to touch on this a smidge. Remember that we talked about this forever ago. Mm-hmm. Eldar feel everything 10 to 20 times more than a human does in everything.
And they feel it in different ways too. Exactly. And that's what the Harlequins' purpose, at least pre-fall, was to take all the knowledge of the Eldar and express it in a form that would effectively drop an Eldar. I mean, when I say drop it, what I mean is when the Harlequins perform, the Eldar stop functioning. They just stare at this performance.
Yeah, they can't even go anywhere.
Because it hits all their senses.
Well, their play is happening in every sense on the psychic plane. You know, it happens. It's a psychic thing. But the biggest thing is that when the Harlequins put on their play, you feel that you recreate the event, not just like you are there operating a mech or something, but that you feel what it felt like to be at that event. And that's a big deal for the Eldar.
Yeah. And so the Harlequins, in my mind, I know where GW stole this from. It was the Globe Theater. There's no question they stole this whole concept from the Globe Theater of it being traveling. Because they travel around. They put on performances. There's a central hub somewhere, which is the Globe. But that was all it is. The Harlequins moved around and did all this stuff. They've taken in some Cirque du Soleil, kind of, I think, more in the models, but not in the story. It's more the story. Well, I guess Cirque du Soleil does tell a story too. But
say, so you don't speak bad about my Cirque du Soleil.
Well, Cirque du Soleil is incredible. I remember the first time I went to Cirque du Soleil, I was like, this is gonna be really stupid. Why am I going? And like 5 minutes in, I'm like, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. Also, how can anyone be that jacked?
Also, these guys put on two shows 5 days a week.
Yeah.
How is everyone not dead?
Well, I assume they're all under 30 because I think
you want me to do 47 flips every night, twice a night?
If you were a Cirque du Soleil performer and you're a Discord, let me know. Cause I genuinely believe that they take these people out like a horse, like a racehorse. Like, all right, you're going over there now.
I just think they're all sitting in that floating liquid pool of regeneration. They're doing the Ra's al Ghul pool.
And if you haven't been to Cirque du Soleil, please honestly go. It is you've got two very different people. Like Brad and I are friends, but we've got different tastes and stuff. We both are like, yes, Cirque du Soleil is awesome. So anyway, the Harlequin performance. So when a Harlequin does a performance, it's called a mask.
Sorry.
What?
they used to be so much better about this in the game.
I know.
The different masks mean a lot.
Well, this is where the problem is, the term mask also gets used too many times because the performance is called a mask. But even the troops are part of a mask.
A mask, but each one's a different.
Yeah, they are. That's right. That's how that, Jesus, I forgot about that. Yes. You're right. It's right. Each of them, I totally forgot. Each of the masks only puts on a specific play.
Right.
Wow.
That, Jesus, it's such a big deal in that. Yeah. And these plays are amazing. Also, if you're Eldar, currently you kind of don't want to see the Harlequins plays because most times Harlequins show up, something's about to go down.
Yeah, and the lore, they are some pretty heavy plot armor. Well, yes. The pretty heavy plot foreshadow. Like, oh, the Harlequins are here.
You're like, oh, this is going to be an awesome show.
Wait for it. Yeah.
Like, are we going to get invaded tomorrow? Son of a bitch. Yeah.
Cool thing about the masks, though, when they perform them, is that it's, as I was saying before, it's a full performance. It's not someone coming out and giving an oratory speech. So the Harlequins, they do speak, but they don't really speak in clear terms. When they perform, it's the audience's job to interpret the truth behind the displays. And if you're basically, every point is, you can't follow what we're doing, you're too stupid to be an Eldar.
And they put you in an emotional state specifically. Yeah. So you have to understand that. Mm-hmm. This is one of the things that the Harlequins are so well respected by everybody, including the Farseers, who are effectively the guides of a craft.
Even the Drukhari have a thing for the Harlequins.
100%.
Like, it's like, you know, the Drukhari homunculi will go and watch a Harlequin.
Also, nobody messes with the Harlequins when they come and put on their play.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're auto dead. Yeah. You do that.
Everyone would kill you.
Yeah, everyone would kill you because, well, for two reasons. We'll get that more later, but they'll get two reasons. One, how dare you? But also, two, we really don't want angry Harlequins showing up here because they're not very
forgiving.
Yeah, I would say they don't use surgical precision when they want revenge.
They've also hounded down people forever.
Yeah. One fun thing about the Harlequins, as we were discussing with the plays, is that as the Eldar were going towards the fall, Harlequins were more and more present on the worlds, performing and it was really just one mask over and over again, showing the fall and birth of Slaanesh. They were telegraphing this to everybody.
They just told everybody this is going to happen, and everybody went, cool play, I've learned nothing. And you're like, how?
Yeah, how? It's literally, we wrote it to appeal to all of your senses. And they're like, you did, but I'm going to go back to my murder cult over here because it's just super fun. So anyway, the vast majority of the Eldar didn't follow the Harlequins' warnings, although the Exodites actually were the first ones to watch it and go, oh, let's get the hell out of here.
They did that way before everybody else did.
Yeah, but it was, I forget which codex I was reading, they pointed to the Harlequins as being one of the reasons for it.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. The Exodites originally went, they just told us this is going to happen. I'm leaving.
I'm leaving now before it happens. And everyone else is like, give it a minute. Same with the Craft Worlds.
But the Craft Worlds were like, hey, we should build giant planet ships.
Yeah.
It's going to take more than a couple minutes to do this.
But we'll get them done. Interestingly, though, post-fall, the masks have turned now. They still do tell some stories, but a lot of it's now forewarning. And the interesting thing about that is they will do these dances, not just for Eldar. They now are doing them for the Imperium and other races, not orcs and not Tyrians.
No, but it's funny though, because they've actually had problems with this, because if you do an awesome play for John and I, and neither one of us are psychers, well, we just missed a third
we talked about in the Eldar cast that the Eldar get annoyed meeting with the Imperium because they show up to the Imperium and they have to tell them a bunch of really complex information, and they do it in about 11 seconds, and the Imperium just stares back at them and goes, I didn't catch a single word you just said. 4.5 hours later, the Eldar is breaking
in fuego
has finished what they did in 11 seconds and are super angry about it. And the Imperium goes, all right, let's go do something about this. The Harlequins are the same thing with their plays. They're like, check this out. Pageantry, magic. You know, it's a Lady Gaga show, all this stuff. And the Imperium goes, I liked that guy's backflip. It was a good backflip.
You're like,
and
that's all you got?
Yeah, that backflip was all about impending doom.
No one's a psyker here? Why are you Mon Kai so bad?
Yeah. Is there someone on the side doing the sign language thing? Like, the kind of everyone can catch up. That would be beneficial.
That is, by the way, what the Eldar call humans.
Oh, I know. That's what they would need.
The Mon Kai.
Oh, I probably, because of the monkey. Yeah.
It's Mankai.
Mankai. Yeah, it's really a stupid thing. But it's,
I know, but it's canon.
They couldn't drop it. I know, they couldn't drop it. So it's like, oh, they still do this thing.
I like this point quite a bit. I love the fact that, as usual, besides my wild hand gestures that I make all the time, and I get up quite frequently, I'm also reading our notes as we go. And I like to point out things that not only you definitely can't see, but make no sense to bother talking about.
Yeah.
But John's got a good note here. And he says that Harlequins are chaotic good for all you D&D guys.
Yeah.
And I couldn't agree more.
You know, the ultimate, they are the maybe the best definition of chaotic good I've ever seen, because their methods are not the best, and they do not care how many people have to die for their cause, so long as they destroy chaos. So if you don't know someone going, it's because they have a vow of peace. And no matter how many people they have to kill to get it. Yeah. You don't get that reference. Seriously, Peacemaker is a great show. And Suicide Squad 2, not one. One was colossal garbage.
With the best Suicide 1, best trailer ever. Terrible movie.
But Suicide Squad 2, terrible trailers, because everyone's like, the first one was horrible. I'm not watching the second one. And then you go watch second one, so and it fun. Is absolute borderline perfection.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Sorry, Harlequin Society. The Harlequins are probably the most enigmatic.
Probably? Yeah. Just are.
Yeah, they are. They are the most enigmatic.
Hold on, let me edit this real quick. Probably, cut, kick, are the most enigmatic.
Yeah, of all the major players of the 40K universe. It's because their true logistics, function, purpose in the galaxy is known only to them. We know what they're trying to achieve, but not even fully. We think we know what they're trying to achieve.
Because, to be fair, I kind of think the Laughing God wants to talk shit more than he wants to do anything.
Yeah.
He wants to win, but also he wants to...
The Harlequins are definitely going to, is their plan, destroy chaos. Full stop. That is going to happen. The problem is that we don't know if that includes blowing up the entire galaxy in the process.
And just hiding in the webway.
Or maybe also taking the webway. I mean, that's the thing. They may be taking everyone with them, because, we'll get to Yanari later. But there is a viewpoint that maybe, all right, what if we just burn the whole galaxy down? We still just defeat chaos. And from a moral standpoint, that's our real goal. So that's why Harlequin's a little bit dicey. Let's talk about where they live. So the Harlequins, as we said before, live inside the webway. Any of you who listen to our Drukhari cast know that they also live in the webway. So they must be neighbors. And
No,
because the webway is almost like the Immaterium in that it's not a real space. So the Drukhari have Kamara and some of the other like pieces in it. It's more industrialized. They are building things out. There is an actual location. Anyone who wants to go to Kamara, who can access the webway, key piece there, can access Kamara. The Harlequins.
And some people have gone there and went, oh no.
Yeah. Most people have Kamara access them. If we're being honest, it's not a great situation, but you can get to Kamara if you can enter the webway. Entering the webway and then getting where the Harlequins are is not possible. The Harlequins, no one actually even knows where the Harlequins are in the webway. We know we'll get to the Black Library later. We know that that's there, but that's about it. We have no idea, and it's not written in any book, how and where the Harlequins survive. So the webway itself, just a quick little side note there. The old ones made it as a way to traverse the galaxy. The key part of the Harlequins being in the webway is their ability to traverse the galaxy, literally in an instant. And a lot of people
It's not like traveling the Immaterium, and it's not instantaneous, because there is physical distance in the webway.
Not in reality. That's the thing. It's the thing is, there is distance in the webway, but there are numerous, with the Harlequins, they appear in an instant.
Yeah, it will. That's the thing.
They can appear across the galaxy in this.
Yes, but there's still some distance. We talked about it when we first talked about the Eldar.
Well, that's because that's more. That's new. That's the thing. No, I had the same thought. And I went and looked back into it. The current Eldar method of using the webway is they have to go into known webway gates, and they have to go through them, and they actually will also have to pass into the Materium
and go to another gate
and walk another gate. So that's why it takes time. The old way of the webway, it was instantaneous. True,
because they went to gate to gate.
Yeah, but it
was. They know all ways.
Exactly. What's happened is post the fall of Slaanesh, it's collapsed, except for the Harlequins.
Well, they also travel because they make the bridge. The
exactly. Bridge. And so this is one thing that people get wrong. I found a lot in just in conversations is that the webway versus the warp travel. And so what we talk about, the webway is massively faster than, and more convenient than warp travel.
Well, it's also, you're not getting killed.
Well, so the big thing is it's a matter of how you understand them. So the warp is this ever moving, ever changing. And so what happens is when you go into the warp, you're going into, into another dimension effectively, and but you still have to navigate through that. It's a shorter distance, but it still is a distance.
Yeah, but also the laws of time, space, and physics don't matter in the material.
But they still do to a point. And the example I use is if you read the Eisenhorn novels, he talks about doing warp travel and it taking months or weeks to get somewhere versus webway travel, which would be instantaneous.
You still have I'm saying the webway, you could lose time. Remember, we talked about that we were talking of the original, the Siege and Terran stuff, and people just showing up a year after they were supposed to be.
Exactly. There. And so this throws stuff off. The webway is dead instant and it's reliable. And the problem is also with the warp, honestly, is this is before we even discuss the problems of you have to have Geller fields or else the warp will eat you, forging a path because stuff just moves within the webway. Stuff just moves within the warp. So you might be traveling a path and all of a sudden, oopsies, chaos demons. The thing, because we don't talk, we should do a cast on warp travel at some point, but a lot of ships just disappear in warp travel. Yep. That just happens. It's part of the deal.
Cough, cough, Tau, try to use it.
Well, that's the Tau's fault. I mean, that's just the Tau's fault.
I just had to throw it out there because there was no other
100%.
Way. We were going to touch on Tau.
And I'm going to mock the Tau here. It's not, maybe it isn't the Tau's fault, but they tried to do warp travel with no psychers.
Yeah,
there was no
psychers and not knowing about Geller fields.
Yeah, it's like there's everything about this. And my issue with that, we're super technologically advanced. Whatever. The more important was there are humans who are part of Tau. You didn't ask a single one of them, hey, when you guys get here through the warp travel, what do you do? Oh, we build a big ship. Got it. Build big ship. Thanks. Have a nice day. And then went over and built big ship.
I really, really want that Tau fleet to eventually show back up and just go, I don't want to talk about it.
Hey, are you guys okay? I'm not talking about it. Where were you? Shut up.
Never. Nope. Yeah.
But I'm never leaving our home planet ever again.
Yeah. I'm driving so far in it. I'm only living on Tau.
Yeah, yeah. The seventh sphere of expansion is actually it goes the other direction. They go, it's the old map. There be monsters here. No, don't leave this place.
Nope.
We're staying here. The biggest piece of the webway versus warp travel is it's a mapped route. So while we talk about the Harlequins, the Harlequins have a full map of the entire webway with every single exit, every single thing. Whereas the warp, you don't. The warp, you need a beacon. You have to have something that you're following.
Yes.
Because aren't landmarks in the warp, by the way.
Because they're moving.
Yeah.
You're like, hey,
and
man.
They're also all bad.
Yeah, they're bad. They're, yeah. You're like, where is Nurgle's garden?
Yeah.
I'm gonna mark that down. Oh, yeah. That seems bad.
So today's journey, this week's journey is going to take us just past Nurgle's garden. I don't think we're going to get past that. I'll be honest. I think we're going to go near
it. Yeah, it's going to be bad news, man.
Yeah.
But it's like going through just a turbulent ocean where you're like, hey, I mapped the sand on the bottom. You're like, that is definitely not going to be what's there anymore.
So the webway allows them to get places in an instant. I should also call out, though, Necrons do have their own goofy technology that was kind of does this.
They face it, but they do the wormhole deal.
Yeah, that's what it's It's hard to gauge. I do want to throw something out the Necron players who might, I don't want them losing their minds. Like, what about Necrons? You're right. Necrons have like their phase shift technology, which does allow them to jump distances, but they have to actually, it's the same as Webway. They have to be pre-marked. They can't just randomly, I think they can do short jumps. They can guess, but that's about it. But the Webway is much more involved because the Webway also goes a lot further. And as we said earlier, there apparently is a Webway entrance in the Golden Throne. Outside of the one that the Emperor tried to build. So,
I mean, he did try to build his own Webway in the basement.
Yeah.
Shit didn't go great.
Yeah. I mean, but he was correct to want to do it because it wasn't even the chaos element. It's the speed. If he could have figured out how to make a Webway.
Because he has bad plan.
He is, but my point is like.
Also, this is Magnus's fault.
Yeah, totally Magnus's fault. But my viewpoint on the Emperor's trying to do, it wasn't just, hey, I don't want to deal with chaos. It's the same with the old ones. The old ones, in my mind, didn't build the Webway because they were worried about chaos because there was no chaos.
Yeah, there wasn't exactly.
They did it because it was a better system.
Oh, 100%. It was so much faster. It's still, even when the warp, the Immaterium was old one style, which was a endless serene plane.
Yeah.
It was still an endless plane of ever changing.
I mean, and this is where it's a kind of a cool thing about this is, so the Eldar civilization, you know, obviously old ones built it. As it grew, they built more webways. So the Eldar, as their civilization just expanded, but put webways everywhere. What's interesting about that is that that's the only method of travel they have. They have faster than light drives, barely. That's about it. So the Eldar and the Tau have about the same vehicle speed.
That is the funny thing on that, because the Eldar never bothered, because why?
Yeah.
Why would you make a better engine when I could be anywhere instantaneously?
Well, it's like, why would I make a worse engine? It's a better way of saying it.
Exactly.
It's like, so I can go anywhere instantaneously? Yeah, but we really want to cherish the journey.
That's good. That might be the best thing said today. Yes.
Go to my wife. Hey, I think about me going on vacation in England. Cool. Are we going to fly? Nope. Sailboat. Why? Just want to have really not like you after 4 or 5 days. Feels like a really, really good decision. So anyway, at the moment of the fall, though, when Slaanesh was born, the Eldar had to shut down a lot of the webways because she did get access to some webways. Well,
that's no. The yeah. Some. That's like saying we closed a couple streets down. No, no, no. We closed 90% of the highways, basically.
Well, yeah, every webway gate in what is now the Eye of Terror, that one's closed.
Yeah.
Those are already done. Those are hard done.
And that's where most of the site. Yeah. The Eye of Terror is where Eldar lived. Yeah. That was the Eldar civilization.
Yeah. It was the Eye of the Eldar.
Yeah.
It was definitely less than that. That was now.
You're like, hey, where are all the Eldar? And then they went, magic trick, they're not there anymore. There was a whole bunch of Eldar, then there wasn't. But also, that was the hub of all of their travel. And then they kind of did what they shouldn't have done. They panicked and they started shutting down.
Yeah.
And then when we were talking about shutting down the Webway, we weren't just nailing some boards on an entrance, they were collapsing portions of the Webway,
yeah.
Which I don't even know how you do that because Webway is...
Yeah, they've never made it clear. But yeah,
exactly.
The Webway is also alive. And so what happens is, as we talked about this actually in the Drukhari cast, in Kamara, Azdrubal, I can't pronounce his name, Azdrubal Vect has been actually opening some of these webways within the Dark Realm to expand out and help the Drukhari actually get a larger section. Even the Craft World Eldar, they're uncovering old webway gates and reactivating.
All the time.
Fun story on that. The Harlequins still have full access to every single webway gate.
Yep.
So even though they were turned off, they're not all the way turned up, except the ones obviously in the Eye of Terror. Those are hard gone.
You ready for Brad Theory of the Week? Mm-hmm. I think that there's wildly more space in the webway created by the old ones that wasn't used.
Oh, yeah.
They just didn't really know about it.
Yeah.
Because they were also the disciples of the old ones. They knew what they let
I think, the way I look at that is I think the Milky Way galaxy is a finite space. Obviously, the universe is ever expanding. I also think the Immaterium is a finite space in that regard. With Immaterium, to me, It's called the Upside Down. It's got two. Matches.
True. It matches the universe.
I don't think
the universe is ever growing, and the galaxy has X amount of space.
Whereas the Webway actually is infinite.
I think that's the thing is that the Dark Eldar just found. An infinite amount of space.
They put two suns in there just because they could.
Right, I'm saying.
It's like, yeah.
They just found all this extra space in the Webway.
Like Joey Chestnut's stomach.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know how he does that either. Dude weighs 110. But also, just go ahead and look. 10,000. If you have no idea, just Google that and you'll figure it out.
He's
competitive eater.
He's competitive eater, which is just,
No, but like, I think that the Webway is semi like AI sentient though, because I think it grows when you need it to grow.
That's possibly true. Cause it is sentient. Cause they talk about that when Ahriman tried to attack into it, the Webway itself just kept
closing itself
started just eating him and his troops.
They just kept going, nope, this is not closed. This road doesn't exist anymore, but it also opened when the Dark Eldar needed it. They didn't know what to do. Yeah. Really. There's all of a sudden a new galaxy sized space to put,
whatever we want. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
I will say a cool thing. If you guys have access to the older codexes, and I mean, like 8th edition had in there, they used to have a map of, actually, I say the codexes, just look this up online. Who am I kidding? Go online and Google it. Like, hey, if you guys want, go spend some money or use the internet. It's free.
Google you speak about, sir?
As I'm saying, like, yeah, if you can get access to an older codex, you could find a cool image or type into Google Webway gate map. Anyway, and it's cool because you can see where all the Webway gates are, especially the one on Terra. Oopsies. Anyway, so back to the Harlequins. For the entire existence. Back to the Harlequins. Yeah, because we needed that piece, because all things the Harlequins do is based on their access to the Webway and their kind of infinite access to the galaxy. Because with this, let's dive into that, actually. The Harlequins have lived within the Webway, and they have truly mastered this. And this gives them two big advantages within the 40K universe. One, their god's not dead, pretty big one. And two, the Black Library.
I want to throw this out here because I read this 2 days ago, whatever you sent this to me.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give you shit about it because I haven't given you shit about it yet. Mm-hmm. One of John's notes is the Laughing God surviving the birth of Slaanesh was pretty beneficial for the Harlequins.
Yeah.
You think?
Just saying. When your god is still alive, you're doing pretty good.
It's better versus, than the other gods being dead.
Versus everyone else whose god is dead.
I just read that and went, I booed my computer screen when I read that. I was like, boo. Yeah.
In my defense, underneath that comment, I wrote understatement of the century. So I realized
still booed him.
Yeah. The thing about Eldar gods is, to recap, we covered them before, is they're not as powerful as chaos gods, but not that far off. They're still gods. That's the thing to remember. And here's how powerful they are. So Slaanesh, as we said, eats the soul of any Eldar
who dies. This is why I booed you, because this is such a big deal. Yeah. Sorry, but
let's dive in. So Eldar, the craft world Eldar wear a spirit stone so that when they die, the stone will absorb their spirit, and the Slaanesh can't get access to it.
Legitimately nourishes or grows in power. Every time an Eldar dies and it doesn't go into a spirit stone, she consumes that soul.
Yeah. And the Drukhari do it by just torturing souls, and somehow they get power from pain. When a Harlequin dies, Kegarak just laughs, swoops in, grabs a soul, gives Slaanesh the middle finger, and bails.
It backflips out.
It's every time.
Smoke bomb.
So the Harlequins are back to being immortal. The thing that all Eldar want, the Harlequins have. They are legitimately an immortal race, which is kind of a big deal in the 41st millennia.
Because the old Eldar actually had full-on reincarnation with memories and shit.
Yeah.
What's
interesting about this, what I don't know is if that means that their soul belongs to the Laughing God.
Effectively.
It's an interesting thing because, as we said, chaotic good. It's always interesting when your soul is owned by chaotic good.
Think of the fact that while they revered, the Eldar revered their gods, they really didn't worship their gods in a traditional sense.
Yeah.
They honored them, but it wasn't I'm paying my due to their gods. No, they were like, this is legit. God. Yeah, this is a god.
And they were real gods, very, very real gods who had real godlike powers. So the Harlequins themselves all have origins in Eldar, obviously. So every Harlequin is an Eldar, and they all join the Harlequins. And this includes, by the way, when I say Eldar, I mean old Eldar. So Eldar, so Craftworld, Drukhari, Exodites, Corsairs, any member, anyone who is genetically an Eldar can join the Harlequins. Once they join the Harlequin, they don the costume and the mask, and they become effectively unidentifiable from there on out. You'll never see them outside of that.
It's different in some of the stories whether or not they pull their own history out, because they make references in the old, like some of the old writings, that once you become a Harlequin, your past deeds are just gone.
Yeah.
Not just, you're new.
Yeah, I saw it too. It's that piece. Are they gone? Like, you don't have any memory of them, or are they gone where just you have moved on from?
Right. I don't know. Cause they make it sound sometimes like just everybody forgets that person was ever there.
I think Harlequins are meant to be kind of somewhat custodes, although custodes are taken at birth, obviously. Yeah. But it's that piece of there is no connection between you and where you came from.
No.
Which does make sense, because you have Drukhari, Exodites, and Craftworld serving in the same mask together. Like, we covered Death Watch. They all actually had at least some level of commonality they started out, but these ones are...
And the thing about it is once you're a Harlequin, you are a Harlequin in spirit, body, mind, everything. You go, everybody's on board with it. Tal, you wanted everybody to do the greater good. Harlequins are doing the Harlequin good.
Yeah, and it is also interesting to figure out where the Harlequins, like how that recruitment process happens. And what I mean by that is, we know that, Eldar will volunteer, but there also seem to be stories of like when Harlequins will be present on a craft protest or whatever, when they leave, a bunch of people are missing.
Yep.
And, we'll also have people, the one I do like a lot, some of them are actually visibly taken, sort of, during the Harlequin performance.
They put them on stage.
Yeah, they go on stage with them, and then they disappear with them. But this also might be they were volunteering. Because it's what happens is the stories are a person is seen conversing with the troop master, and then they suddenly disappear.
Right.
But no one can hear what was said. So it may just be this is actually how they recruit. And the few times you see it, the people are like, oh, yeah, I'll totally join the Harlequins. Like, cool, let's go. You're a Harlequin.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
So once they've joined the Harlequins, as Brad was just saying, new life, new purpose. They're going to get the role of the light, the role of the dark, or the role of the twilight. Each of these, when we say a role, these are actors in a play. So the light is always the protagonist of the story.
But it's... Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, we'll dive. At least do the overall. Then we'll dive.
I know, but it's like so much more. It's not like your role. It's your role in the play, but that's not. It's your role in life.
Well, because their play is their society. So right. Let me just give the overview, and then we'll dive more. Sorry. So the light are the antagonists. The light are the protagonists. The dark are the antagonists, and the twilight, who's my favorite, are the journey that one goes through to arrive at the light or the dark.
Which I kind of feel is like the most important, actually.
Oh, the twilight of the best.
It's supposed to be what you're supposed to learn or get or understand in the play.
It was 9th edition where the twilight were broken as all hell, right?
They were it became light. Light was broken.
Light got worse.
Light was broken at the beginning, and then twilight became the one that everybody played.
Yeah. Anyway, I just like twilight a lot.
Dark got nerfed immediately.
Dark was immediately like, this
that
is
was nope. That everybody gets to fight on death. You're like, no problem.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, cool. I'm going to charge my entire army in.
They used to fight twice. They had the fight on death that happened even after you fought.
Yeah, so I fight, you fight me back, I die, then I fight again. Yep. And for some reason, they were like, maybe we should take that rule out. people are making this unfun.
You're like, I don't like this game.
Yeah, this game's so if I kill you, I die. Yeah, well, I won't attack you. No, rule says you have to.
Yep. That's true.
Oh, God. That was brutal. Oh, anyway. So as Brad was just saying, each of these groups, light, dark, and twilight, this is their entire life, though. A player of the dark doesn't just perform the antagonist in a play. Everything they do, even the way that they wage war, and we'll cover more of this later, is that of the antagonist. Twilight wage war in a weird way. But This is all because outside of combat, which is the majority of the time, the Harlequins, you know, will arrive at a place and put on a performance. As we said before, the performance to tell a story to the audience. And the performances are somewhat customized usually to the audience. Not so much the story doesn't change, but which story is told is determined by the audience in front of them. And so this is why we talked before, when the Harlequins show up, the Eldar stop whatever they're doing and watch because they're about to get good information. It's not, this isn't a fun, like, ooh, well, it's Married with Children's on reruns and I want to catch
it. You're not even just, you're not getting like a life lesson that you need. You're getting a, we're probably going to have some shit happen to us very soon because that's what happens.
Oh, every time.
What do I need to learn from this right now to help me stay alive and my craft room stay alive?
What's amazing to me is the way that they perform the plays. So each troop will perform their role with absolute perfection and to a level where, like, it looks almost like they're one being moving in front of them because they, the way they dance, the way they flip, the way they do these things, again, Cirque du Soleil times a million. They show off perfection in speed, perfection in accuracy, etc. However, to that end, with the plays, they don't always just do plays. Sometimes they also wage war. And this is called a Seydath.
I like this quite a bit because what happens a lot of times, especially when they do big incursions, the worst thing to see is a lot of Harlequins show up. Sometimes the Harlequins show up and give you knowledge about what's going to happen. And sometimes a bunch of Harlequins show up.
And they're gonna party.
Yeah, and then they give you a play, but that play is Tyranids are showing up tomorrow kind of thing.
Well, but let's talk about what happens when the Tyranids show up and the Harlequins are still there.
True.
The Harlequins also don't wage war in a traditional fashion. They perform a play while waging war. So you're getting your ass kicked, and your opponent is using the ass kicking to tell you the story of another ancient ass kicking. It's amazing. So a fun example. So the Serpent's Brood is a play where the Harlequins ride into battle on anti-grav transports. From there, they then jump out of the transports and using jumps, kicks, and literally pirouettes. It wrote this in the codex. It said pirouettes. They slaughter their entire opponents, never touching the ground. Each killing blow launches them back up into the air to go on to the next one. They snap necks. They poke swords into heads until everyone's dead. And at their final killing blow, they leap up one more time back into the transports to disappear into the webway. And this is to tell the story of the ancient cosmic spirits or ancient cosmic serpents that would prey on planets from above. So they just wiped out thousands, tens of thousands of soldiers, usually guardsmen, by the way. And then that's what this is,
so guardsmen, many
guardsmen or fire warriors. And then they jump back into the sky and just go, did y'all get the story? You followed that, right? And it's like, everyone's dead. Right. But there used to be cosmic serpents and they would go through the galaxy. You guys didn't follow that?
I was too busy having you cut off my head.
Philistines. So each troop therefore has their own style of combat, which we were talking about earlier. So the light, as the antagonist, they focus on speed and precision. So they tend to toy with their enemies kind of at range, and then they burst through and kill and then disappear again. It's infuriating to a foe because they're all of a sudden distance on top of you. It is, you know, again, not an uncommon way to wage war, but that's a side note.
They did have to nerf this on this was one of those, it got close to how it was supposed to be on the board.
Yeah.
And remember when you said infuriating the foes? Super cool when you're talking about war. Super not cool when you're talking about two people playing a game of 40K on a board and one person is infuriating. Oh, God, when they just did all the 6-inch moves.
Yeah, it was so much fun to play.
It was insane.
It was so much fun to play if you had them, not play against it. Oh,
God, it was playing against so annoying.
So the dark focus on death and pain. So what their goal is, when they strike you, they want maximum force and maximum devastation. They intentionally leave giant pools of blood where the light would have left like a small mortal wound. So like when the light finishes a battle, if it's, you know, we'll just say guardsmen, for example, there'll be a, you know, thousands of dead guardsmen, but all with like a single incision somewhere that killed them. And when the dark do it, it's a giant pool of blood everywhere.
Here's my thing on this. It's anime battles. They want anime levels of giant slashing, spurting blood, shooting all over. That's dark. That's what I think when I think dark attacking.
I don't watch anime.
Whatever. You're missing some cool stuff.
Oh, I'm nothing against anime. It's like at a certain point, like as you get older, jobs, you know, careers, hobbies, children, you have to start saying, I'm not even gonna let myself know about some stuff that exists because if I do that rabbit hole, I'm just gone.
And a side story on that, I actually didn't find it until much later in life and people came up and started.
Right. And they make you, I was at a point where people were like, hey, are you aware anime is cool now? Cause I was born in 81. So it's like, you know, anime in like the late 90s, it was cool. When Transformers was technically anime, but it's a little bit of that. And then people are like, oh no, actually it's not super weird and pervy anymore. It's incredibly interesting. Stories are well written. Yeah. The animation is incredible. And I'm like, I would love to. I just don't have that time. Yeah. My brain will then want to consume all of it.
Mine was late 2000s is when anime existed.
This is at time recording is 2025. Mm-hmm. If I were to get into anime, I would lose 6 months of my life because I would go back to the old stuff and start.
I would only watch things that people would go, you know how I feel about this. And they go, this is something you would like.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I just have to avoid it. All right. Twilight though. So Twilight, again, my favorite.
I love these guys.
Yeah. So they're known as the balance of light of life and death. So their combat style is all about striking at the most opportune time. The Twilight do a very super movie style combat. They will put themselves in a position like with sword out, whatever it is out, and they will just hold still until the opponent gets just at the right range and they just kill them. And they go back to standing still.
Well, I want to expound on that because one of the best things about it is it isn't like they have a bunch of individual duels, though, because a troop fights as one whole.
Yeah.
And they do these, the one person still to let the other two
get. Oh, yeah. They're all still. You've got like 10 dudes are standing there perfectly still. And as soon as the opponent gets the right range, they all move at once and the opponent's not there.
It legitimately, again, looks like the play's happening because they move. As one, they're doing all these moves.
It's the ultimate robot.
But they're also moving so fast and doing everything. But then you look at it later and go, did they just actually perform a bunch of ballet moves in this battle?
Let's just say in the deep, dark sections of the Inquisition galleries, they watch videos of Harlequins drinking.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just like, all right, check this out. Like this guy's, let's take bets on how far this head is going to go once it's chopped off that body. Like 100% being done by the Inquisition.
Because they do full dances inside this that are part of the way that they fight. And they're all choreographed, basically, effectively.
And one area I want to talk about is the difference here. Because we talked about, when we're talking about the Harlequins fight as one, I obviously criticize GW a lot by using the same thing over and over and over again. It is different, though, than the Space Marines. Because we talk about the Space Marines fight as one, but they don't. They fight as one with a diversity of troops. So each squad in the Space Marines is designed to do a very specific task that targets a specific enemy that's most susceptible to their style of war. That's why you have a Devastator squad. Although those are mostly gone now. It's why you have, thanks, Brad.
Love me. I love Devastators.
I know. And that's why we don't have, that's why their points are horrible.
That's why we don't have nice things.
We don't have nice things. That's why we can't have nice things. Each portion of a Space Marine army is designed to do a singular task. And then as one, all those pieces come together like Voltron and fight as one. Harlequins are not. Harlequins actually fight as one. Each of them is a fully encompassed fighting style. The entirety of the light, the entirety of the dark, the entirety of the twilight can show up and fight. They will at times have multiples, but it's rare. It's usually just only one of them has arrived. It's usually only one mask is ever fighting at one time.
In lore, for sure.
Yeah, and so this makes them truly an army of one in that regard. I always like to call that out because I don't want people being like, oh, well, John, when the Eldar do it, you're totally okay with it. But when everyone else does it, you're kind of a dick about it. Like, it's still probably true, but but I'm justifying myself.
As being a hypocrite.
Yeah. So what this does, though, is the Harlequins, it makes them, they just overwhelm their enemies because you can't even counterattack their style because it's just so, it's so diverse. Because every single soldier is not like, oh, okay, the light are here, so maybe I can draw them out and no, I'm dead. You know, or the twilight. Well, what if we use range? Okay, we're also dead. They're such incredible combat.
It probably looks cool. You mean you're dying, but you're like, that was awesome.
The Harlequins, unlike all the lame armies of the 40K universe, are perfection in their simplicity. And I'm going to call this out.
The lame armies.
Well, they are. Okay. The Harlequins are. What the fuck? They've got 8 data sheets. 8.
I know, but it's like, unlike the lame armies.
Because I think they're the best. The Harlequins. All right, the paint job's a pain in the ass. The good news is you just buy the same 8 boxes over and over again. Also, suck it, World Eaters, by the way. They all complain about, oh, we don't have enough data sheets. The Harlequins have 8 data sheets. 8. And only one, I mean, sure, when 1 to 2 of them are broken beyond all repair, like, it is easy to play with them. But yeah, the Harlequins just win on the tabletop with 8 data sheets. And up until 9th edition, Void Weavers didn't even exist.
That's true.
Remember those? Don't think I'd ever seen one on the tabletop ever. So it was technically 7 data sheets you were playing with. They were fun. Anyway, Harlequin tech. So how are they able to be so good with what is 8 data sheets? And it's because Harlequin tech is Eldar and Jukari tech turned up to an 11. It's actually more terms like a 13, if I'm being honest. Because they took all just normal Eldar and Jukari weaponry and miniaturized it and improved it. Like, she'd like the Death Watch, but just even better. Because, like, the Harlequins have Haywire technology, which so do the Jukari. And it's just, but it's an EMP gun that fires electromagnetic energy that can just destroy electronics, but also kills machine spirits and scrap codes. It can drop, it just drops stuff in an instant. And the Jukari carry this in small rifles, basically.
Yeah.
Like, it's nothing.
Well, the thing is that the Harlequins do everything that the Eldar do, and they kind of miniaturize everything, to be honest.
That's why it's the miniaturization is really cool. I mean, it seemed like prism technology. So we talked about one of my favorite things, Brad's least favorite in the entire Eldar line, fire prisms.
Because it's gigantic.
It's gigantic and costs a lot of points. But when it hits things, it makes it go boom.
Yeah, you know, it's easier to do. It'll bring a 1/3 the size tank with the same gun.
1/3. They carry them. That's true. They've also got them. Guys have them in pistol form.
Also true.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about the Void Weaver gun.
Oh, yeah. The Void Weaver gun is the same thing as the Fire Prism gun. It's just a lot smaller. But they also carry them in pistol form because they're freaking Harlequins and they're awesome. I mean, they do have shuriken, which I hate. So we're just going to skip the shuriken because it shoots little ninja stars for no reason.
I know. I'm not even going into it.
It's just a dumb. It could shred the opponent. So can a bullet. And it actually goes straight.
But it would look cool.
Yeah, if it was a spitting star,
shoot it like this,
too. Yeah, exactly. Like, what is this? Like, ugh. Anyway. But more importantly, though, the Harlequins pistol game, I think, is the most on point.
With fusion and neural? Holy crap. Yeah,
so the first one is their fusion pistols, which is a melta gun that just, but in a pistol form, so you can get close to your, like, the most armored foe it exists and just put a hole in it with your pistol. Or the one that doesn't get played enough, which was awesome, or is a neurodisruptor.
Oh, it's so good.
In lore, I mean, on tabletop, it's effectively useless.
It's because it does the 2. We used to just straight do mortals for a while.
It did do straight mortals, but
now it's not. It's good.
Yeah. But the neurodisruptor shoots an invisible energy at an opponent, also known as weird electrons, and it, at the atomic level, so it can go straight through armor. This is why I don't like it on the tabletop, because in theory, this should auto hit, auto wound every single time in the lore because it shoots.
It still has to be a two. I would say 2/2.
But it still shoots. Yeah, you could miss.
You could just miss.
But if I don't miss, you die.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. You have no chance.
Yeah, once it gets through, because it goes right through the armor and then it actually just demolishes your nervous system and you just fall to the ground paralyzed. And then they can walk over to you and just stab you.
It's the same thing with monofilaments, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, they're pretty similar. Well, monofilament at least is like, they're in the lore, there's stuff about monofilament can be blocked by armor.
It can be blocked by actual void shielding and stuff like that. Yeah,
exactly. Whereas
this armor, it just passes through.
Yeah, the neurodisruptor just goes through and then you fall down, but you're not dead. You just, because you're nervous. Well, maybe if your nervous system turns off, you probably are dead.
I mean, it's probably, how about this? It's not going to feel great either way.
Yeah. But the greatest part of Harlequins, that's why there's a heavy side, is their melee weapons. And it's heavy side because we lost them all.
Yeah, the caress, the kiss.
So up until stupid 10th edition, every Harlequin had their own weapon. Now they're just called Harlequin special weapons.
They're just Harlequin weapons.
Kiss my ass. This one pisses me off. So let's start with the caress, which I was going to sing the Misfits song, but I don't think I'm doing it right now. When I wrote the notes, I was like, oh, I'll make a funny joke. And I was like, I have a Misfits tattoo on my arm. So if you've seen me in person, you'll notice it. So the caress. The caress encases the Harlequin's hand. I love this weapon so much. It just looks like a hand. That's all it looks like on the model. But what it is it's a hand that's encased in a phase field, just like the Necron and Deathwatch weapons or the Calexus Assassin. The Harlequin can then use its hand to reach into your body, rematerialize, grab your heart or organs, and pull them back out of your body, a la Indiana Jones. I hope they say that while they're doing it. But they could grab any organ, so keep that in mind. If they just want this to really, if they really want to make
dick
a point,
move, man, dick
yeah,
move.
Yeah, they want to make a point, any organ. But yeah, they could actually pull out an appendix. So if they could save a life.
I feel that that's what they're doing a lot.
It would be funny. Just one Harlequin shows up and a bunch of guardsmen walks over. The guy swipes a caress at him. The guy just like, what happened? Like, oh, your appendix is no longer bursting.
That's Dr. Harlequin to you, sir. Yeah.
Thank you. And then everyone's like, that guard, whoever that guy is, he's incredibly important. Like, just whatever he is.
No shooting at that guy.
No one let him die. The next big, great one was the Embrace, which is Spider-Man's web slinger, but filled with the same monofilament as a warp spider gun. So what they do is they...
This is so funny, though, because they effectively punch you, and you're like, yeah, you missed, and you're like, oh, I'm dead.
Yeah, they punch the opponent in the face or wherever, and just as they're making contact, the Spider-Man thing shoots off, firing a bunch of monofilament into like the gap of the armor that's right there.
It just phases through.
Yeah, just goes right in and then eats whatever soft tissue is inside of there. And then there's the Harlequin kiss, which is the most common of their weapons. The Harlequin's kiss is meant to be like the stinger of a bee. So again, attached to their wrist is a microscopically sharp tip. And so as the Harlequin's dancing around in combat, it basically they move their arms out and it looks like nothing, but their opponent just suddenly drops. It's because as their arm goes out, this needle shoots out and goes through a gap in the armor and will make a small puncture wound, like, you know, into their heart.
Yeah, but it sucks because it also does an explosion inside of you.
Yeah, so it actually goes in. You're right. Goes in as soon as it punctures your skin or punctures your armor. So it gets into your skin. It just in a millisecond explodes outward and expands, and then collapses and comes back in. And so the opponent just drops because imagine it basically goes into someone's head, and then their brain is turned to mush.
Yeah,
and then onto the next.
You throw a razor blade net into my head and I haven't come back out. Like, I'm gonna lay down now. I don't feel very good.
But all of those weapons require you to kind of, you know, be close and dancing. What if I want to move impossibly fast and just cut heads off? The Zephyr Glaive.
I don't know, say you're riding a bike.
Yeah. Well, not riding a bike. You're riding on the outside of a bike. Because the Zephyr Glaives are I do love Harlequin bikes. The Zephyr Glaive is a dude holding on to a Eldar speed bike, which is one of the fastest things in the galaxy, with one hand. So there's a guy driving it. Then there's another guy holding onto the back and holding a pole arm with it and just lopping heads off as it flies through.
Yep.
At like Mach 3.
That's so hilarious.
Oh, they also have power swords. I don't care about power swords.
Just take the Zephyr Glaive. It's so much cooler.
Well, it's a piece of like they have like Harlequins have power swords, and some of their power swords are cool, but it's just a power
Zephyr Glaive cool
or caress cool.
Yeah, any of those things. Yeah,
all of these things are more awesome than there's also a sword. Power sword does a lot of damage.
Also, all kills are done by backflipping. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying.
So as we said before, all the Harlequins are made up of players in a troop, and so. As with all the plays, all the Harlequins have different roles in their troop. So the basic Harlequin is just the troop. You know, and by basic, I mean an Imperial Assassin level in combat. So I mean, like the basic Harlequin.
You know, really plain Jane guy, probably the same as a guardsman, you know, phasing in and out of
reality. Can have a conversation with you while having a fist fight with a custode.
Yeah.
You know, basic.
Fighting on in and out of a moving vehicle that's traveling, I don't know, 300-400 miles an hour. Do the correction for kilometers for everywhere else. But, and then, oh yeah, did I mention? We talked about the whole not touching the ground. They often fight as, it's one thing they do in the game that's nice. They get to bounce back into
Shadow transports,
Yeah, but they will just kill people and bounce back into their still moving transport. Yeah.
It's awesome. Cool thing about the troops is they actually wear a special mask in combat. So the word, these ones are actually M-A-S-K-S. The other ones were M-A-S-Q-U-E-S.
Mask versus mask.
Yeah, it's the same pronunciation. Sorry,
anyone. For us.
Yeah. Suck it, non-English speakers. This language is weird. Sorry, like just gonna call that one out. But these masks that they wear are actually have the effect of everyone who looks at them sees something different. Not in the sense of like Mission Impossible, like that, like where I appear to be someone else. It's way nastier. It's a psychological effect where you become face to face with your worst fears. And so what this mask has an ability to do is actually will freeze an opponent or at least slow them down because they just get mesmerized by the face of the Harlequin.
Bring back initiative.
In which case you get stabbed.
Bring back initiative.
Yeah.
It made so much more sense when they have stuff like this.
Yeah. Initiative, look, here's like, I know you want to bring back initiative and I get where you're coming from on it. It is
the ultimate
feel bad.
I know.
Like it's the same with, I don't think we should, but they got rid of seize the initiative. So
that's terrible.
That was awful.
Such a bad feel.
I'm going first. Cool. I'm going to deploy my entire army for going first. Also cool. I rolled a 6. You're not going first anymore. You lose the game. Yeah. It sucked. Anyway. We don't know how this happens, by the way, as far as getting promoted. But some troops become troop leaders, which are called troop masters.
Lead players and they have troop masters.
That's
right.
Lead
player is the sergeant.
The lead player is the sergeant. And then you have the troop master, who at one point were called avatars because they were avatars of Kegarak, but GW changed that. Now they're just troop masters, which is fine. Basically, they're just a little more than a standard troop. They can on the tabletop. That's all they do in the lore. Holy crap! Do they do more? So first off, they're the leader of the troop, and so they're in charge of leading the show. So they take on all the key roles of the performance. They're also the ones who speak to the audience. Or victims.
Yeah,
I was just about to say. Same thing. The coolest thing to me about them, though, is that they always leave evidence of their presence. So after a performance, the troop master will leave a small flag behind, and the flag is a symbol of the troop, letting everyone who watched the performance know who was performing, or
a massive war.
Yeah, a massive war where everyone's dead, and you let the calling card of like...
The best is they do it the exact same way for either.
Yeah. Oh, it's the same calling card. Frozen Stars were here. That was a wonderful performance. I'm glad the Frozen Stars were here. Frozen Stars were here. And the Inquisition's like, we have to kill every Frozen Star. The next one up is the Shadow Seer, which is the ringmaster of the Harlequins. They're incredibly powerful psychers, like Farseer level of power.
Also, can we just talk about how cool this model looks?
Oh, the model looks amazing.
If you're going to just grab a Harlequin, grab a Shadow Seer might be the coolest. It just looks so cool.
I like Death Jesters, but yeah.
I mean, you can never go wrong
because of what Death Jester is. Because of what Death Jester is. But so the Shadow Seers are basically a Farseer level psyker. Fun note on that, though. In order to keep Slaanesh out, Kamra has a very strong no psyker policy. And not like the no shirt, no shoes, no service policy. This one's real. Yeah. Like no psychers. If a psyker is found within they kill it instantly. Unless that psyker is a Shadow Seer, in which case they can walk around yelling, I'm a psyker, I'm a psyker.
Doing psychic powers.
And everyone in Kamra is like, cool, cool. Glad you're here. Awesome. Super, super glad you're here. What makes them kind of fun is that they actually use a combination of psychic powers and technology to make their performances of the Harlequins even better, or in combat doing incredibly horrible things.
They buff though. I love the fact that they buff. They also obfuscate. They sneak up.
They'll blind the opponents. They'll use precog to make it so the opponents. So Harlequins used to have a double move. That's what this was. The idea was, and this is again, lore of tabletop when they get it right. As a Shadow Seer could make one of your Harlequin units double move. That came from the lore, because in the lore, they were such powerful precogs that they could tell their the other Harlequins what to do. And it made the Harlequins feel like they were moving at two or three times the speed of their opponents, because they could match anything the opponent was doing because they knew what they were doing ahead of time.
I love their obfuscation, because their obfuscation isn't we're the predator and we're sneaking in. Yeah. No, the Shadow Seers were actually affecting your mind.
Yeah, you could not see them. Exactly. They also did just have...
And yes, I'm John Cena-ing right now.
That was all marionette puppets. The entirety of it. All right, but my favorite one is they could also melt your mind.
Yes.
I miss Mirror of Minds.
That was such a gross power.
It was so much fun. So, okay. You and your opponent...
It's the only thing that you did that you won when you tied. Everything else, the defender wins in a tie. This was the only one where the attacker won on a
tie. So everyone understands the way it works is I would roll a d6 and my opponent would roll a d6. And if I rolled the same or higher than them, they took a mortal wound. And then we did it again and again and again.
Until you won.
Until they won. Although was it...
Or you died.
Yeah. It was awesome. It was my favorite thing to cast.
So annoying.
It didn't work most of that, but when it did work, people were just broke. It was so great.
It was also a leadership chest. It was the D6 plus leadership.
That's the Thousand Suns or GSC.
It's Mind War.
Is that GSC?
No, that's regular Elder.
No, it was. I couldn't. No, GSC had one.
See, they have the same. They have
GSC had one that was
GSC
nasty,
and that, GSC and Mind War were the same thing. This is different.
Right, that's right. That's right. Okay, but the GSC one, they could act. Just had a way to manipulate your leadership, so it was impossible to stop.
GSC because they could make everybody around you had a stacking modifier.
Yeah, so it could actually be like, all right, I'm going to do this power. That thing's auto death.
Right.
So anyway, those were the good old days. All right, but Death Jester, my second favorite. The Death Jester is a sniper meets a heavy weapons specialist meets the Punisher. Their role in a play is to play death itself. They're the Grim Reaper, for lack of a better analogy. They are the most cold and calculated killers ever. But they add pizzazz, because they're not just the like Leon level like murderer who just goes like, okay, I'm just gonna kill everyone. You're very well aware that there's a Death Jester there, because they're messed up, man. Like, they hum a tune. They're known for humming while slaughtering foes.
They can't do it in the game because there isn't a way to do it, but they, in the lore, one of the biggest things they do is you've got this devastating unit that's driving in a transport, and they just shoot the driver.
Yeah.
That's all the time. One of their main things.
One of my favorite. So they also, they congratulate themselves for very good kills. They actually take a bow and will applaud themselves. So
the battlefield, just so funny.
They're awesome. So their favorite things to do is they'll be in position and they'll just wait while a leader is like giving a really rousing speech to everyone. And then as the leader is giving the final decibel.
Today is not that day.
Yeah, the final word, his head explodes. Or they'll just sit. The other one I loved is they'll sit silently watching troops mine an entire field. And then just as they finish, begin shooting at them, forcing them to run into their own mines.
Well, one of my favorite on the tabletops was if a Death Jester shoots you, and that's still right now, this is still a rule that you have to take a leadership check. It's battle shock.
Yeah.
But before you had to take, you remember you used to have to kill guys.
Yeah.
If you failed your leadership, you had to lose guys equal to whatever you did it. The Death Jester got to pick
who
died, the first one that died. So you would lose coherency. Yeah. He would take the middle guy.
The Death Jester was awesome. Oh, another one that they would do is they would shoot a heavy weapon team as they were pulling the trigger, causing the weapon to explode. Yeah. Basically shoot like as a guy's firing a rocket, he shoots him in the leg so that the rocket shoots into the ground and blows everything up. My favorite story of them was, it's in the 8th edition Codex if you want to look it up. So it was a Mordian guardsman and his squad. They're fighting just an unknown enemy. So they call for extraction, and there's a lander inbound. It was a single Death Jester. After like picking off these guardsmen, a bunch of them found shelter, like a small trench right by the landing pad, and they were hiding there. And they could see the Death Jester appear, and the Death Jester fired like three shots at them and went right over their heads and missed. Didn't miss. It hit the pilots in the cockpit of the landing shuttle, which then caused the landing shuttle to crash into the trench on top of the Mordian guardsmen who were there. The commander survives this, watches the Death Jester stand up, take a bow for himself, and then shoots the commander.
You're like, dick move, but cool.
Yeah, super cool. But let's get to the best. The Solitaire. I mean,
it's going to be awesome sauce.
The Solitaire is the greatest warrior in the entire galaxy, bar none.
Oh, 100%.
I mean, I'm talking, I don't care about Gaz. I don't care about anything. The Solitaire
is the greatest warrior. The greatest distance between lore and
the truth is he should not have a model.
No.
That's the thing. It's the same reason.
It's too OP.
It's the same reason they pulled Asdrubal Vect out of the game.
Yeah, because his lore is too nuts.
It's like, oh, yeah, today I'm playing Space Marines. Oh, what'd you bring with you? The Emperor.
Yeah. Things are probably going
to
go bad.
Do I get to play this game? Nope.
No.
No.
I'll see all your guys die. What? Yeah. What? But yeah, before they got here.
They're all dead. Yeah. So the Solitaire. So
I'll set up the play first.
Yeah.
Who are they in the play?
Solitaire in a play has the most important role. It's Slaanesh. When the Harlequins are performing their mask, if on the story of the fall, the birth of Slaanesh is played by a Solitaire. And this is incredibly problematic because when a Harlequin plays a role in a play, so much like Robert De Niro, they're all method actors.
You got to go into Dances with Wolves, or not Dances with Wolves, that's Costner. Last of the Mohicans.
Oh, Daniel Day-Lewis. Oh, yeah.
That guy's epic.
You're
crazy.
Brad's right. It's Daniel Day-Lewis. Daniel Day-Lewis level of method acting. That's what the Harlequins all do. So if you're playing Slaanesh, you embrace and become the greatest enemy of your own people. And so in order to do so, the Solitaires must like possess and control like their themselves in a power like beyond that of a Phoenix Lord. Because every minute of every day, they have now opened their soul up to the temptation of the fall. It's not just the temptation of Slaanesh. It's the temptation to become what the Eldar used to be. And so every Solitaire, they believe, is touched directly by Kegarek. And the god actually flows through them because the story is that for every Solitaire, Kegarek has stolen them back from Slaanesh. That's how they describe it. So they effectively, their soul was consumed by Slaanesh, and then Kegarek took it back.
As the greatest trick that he does.
Yes.
But to be a Solitaire kind of sucks.
Yeah, they're complete and total solitude. They're always seen, they're only ever alone and just wandering. The fun story is no one knows they're a Solitaire. So they just kind of, they'll wander around Eldar and Drukhari societies, but they don't speak, you know.
They're also headhunters.
Yeah, you can kind of figure out that there's one nearby. And because they communicate with gestures and dances. And I think this was supposed to be something kind of cool where like, oh, they're mysterious and whatever. But in my mind, it's more like, so basically everyone knows it's a Solitaire and they just kind of avoid it because it's also a Solitaire. Like, does that make sense?
I mean, it's still mysterious and I'm okay with that.
What's cool?
Sometimes something doesn't make sense, but it's part of the mystique and I'm okay.
That's fair. One thing I really do enjoy about them though is that even the other Harlequins don't know if they're present. So suddenly, while the Harlequins are performing a mask, the Solitaire, a la Superman coming out of a phone booth, will just appear in full costume, and the play changes on an instant and becomes, now it's a story of the fall because a Solitaire is here.
And everything changes. And on the battlefield, this is so crazy. Because let's talk about what an average person moves on the board. An average person moves 6.
Yeah.
The Solitaire moves 12, but can go 12 plus 2d6 plus another d6 and then charge 2d6.
Yeah, so I want to talk a little bit about the Solitaire. By
the
way,
that's not enough. That's the craziest thing on the board, and it's still not fast enough per the lore, because the solitaire just shows up.
Solitaire would appear on the board, and anything near it is dead.
But it also
and then the next to, turn, yeah, everything and anything between where it was and where it is now is dead.
Yeah,
it's they're insane warriors. What I like about them too is that they're also revered by the Harlequins. So as we said before, the Harlequins troop is structured where it's led by a troop leader. But there's this like off dotted line off the troop leader for a solitaire. Should a solitaire show up on a battlefield, every single Harlequin sees what they're doing and follows the solitaire. they have complete and total control, but it's because they also always win. The example I use here is they have the precision in fight that makes a custode look like a Bulgrin. I mean, they are...
In lore, yeah. It's bananas.
Yeah. Hand-to-hand, they'll slaughter entire squads. This is what appeared in the Golden Throne. And the custodes didn't know what to do about it until they got bored and left.
Yeah, and the thing is, they're so fast. It's a saying in the game. They move 10 times as fast as most other people can on the board.
Yeah.
And it's still not fast enough.
Yeah.
Because they'd had to... When the times when the Imperium seen a solitaire, they have to go back over the tape basically to find out what happened.
Yeah, and it drives me nuts about this. This is where the tabletop solitaires drive. Like the point where I almost don't like playing my solitaire on the tabletop because they are in the lore invincible.
Yeah, but
they
can almost kill reliably 5 Marines.
Yeah. Like they could, I'm less upset at the lower killing rate. I'm more upset that the Marines kill it back. Like the Marines
instantly.
The Marines should be at a -7 to hit.
the solitaire should have a bounce or something. Solitaire should probably be unplayable because its rules should be
I just want to help you with it. Like when I talk them up, so there are numerous stories of solitaires just killing Imperial assassins in passing because a solitaire is hunting someone down. There was a story of this, they're hunting someone down. The Imperium sent Eversors to go protect the target, and the Solitaire just murdered all the Eversors. Although one time the Solitaire did make the Eversor explode to kill the target. That was the funny one.
Well, how about we talk about it? Let's talk about the real thing, though.
What, that the Solitaire may not actually be a Solitaire?
Yeah, the Solitaire. Hey, man, sometimes the Laughing God shows up personally, yeah,
as a solitaire.
Yeah, and then you're like, hey man, I lost. Why? That battle felt really unfair. Oh yeah, you were fighting one of the Eldar gods.
Yeah, you were fighting a god. You mean someone that people look up to and like and they think is impressive? No. An actual Eldar god.
Like avatar of him? Oh no. He showed up personally.
The full thing. You fought a 60 million year old god. Yeah. That loss wasn't so bad.
Yeah, it doesn't sting very much.
Okay, so
I did get tooled up pretty bad.
Yeah, it was kind of an ass kicking, but yeah. So the solitaires, again, the tabletop just makes me sad.
Yeah,
I don't think I've ever had a solitaire survive a battle.
No, God, no. He kills something and then he insta dies.
Yeah, just sad. Anyway, death jesters are actually good right now. But all right, with that though, I think we'll break there because we've been a little bit long there. Next week, we're going to go more into what a Harlequin move. That's right. Next week, we're going to move more away from what a Harlequin is what we were doing today, and rather focus more on their role in 40K lore, especially like as a vehicle that GW uses to move the narrative along. It's probably their biggest piece recently.
You Lud fanboy on them as well as I do. We do give them a bunch of passes and stuff we don't usually do because they are heavy-handed sometimes with Harlequins show up and move it, but I still like it.
Yeah, the difference is the Harlequins have become the vehicle to move the lore along. And that's the whole thing. Because when the Harlequins arrive, and that means, ooh, plot change is coming. And that's what makes
them play the role of the narrator quite a bit. I like that a lot.
I will admit, though, I'm not 100% that they should be a tabletop army.
Oh, no.
Like, I just them and custodes are both like you don't like knights or airplanes, which is fine, but that's more of a, because that's a balancing issue, I think.
That's balance.
Whereas custodes and Harlequins both fall in the category of like,
they're too OP.
Yeah. In lore, they don't belong on the table. So then you put them on the tabletop and you're like, oh,
you're always a little bit disappointed because you're like, didn't this thing just wipe out all of these things?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, my solitaire might be an Eldar god. And it just went down to an
No, it's strength squad. 6, AP 2, 2 damage.
Yeah, exactly. With 4 you're wounds.
Like, yeah, that does not feel Eldar Gotti.
Yeah, 4 wounds with a 50-50 save. Doesn't really feel a whole lot Eldar God. Like, pretty loose definition of God. All right, but anyway, we hope you guys enjoyed today's cast and that you'll join us again next week. But till then, this has been John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.